Continue. We have not played. I've not played in a month since the end of our last leg of tour. So you are all a part of the guinea pig situation, rehearsal slash performance. The wine may help. It's like it takes you out of the front part of the brain. And then you can just like rest on some sort of laurel situation. But I don't know if I have that. This song, I always screw up, even when I know it. So let's see what happens. I haven't played here in so long, so I want it to be good. So this song is called Tall Tales for Spring, and this is from a record called Rabbits on the Run. Wicked in me is surely the way.
the stars through a window.
I move into the future, which is this record I just put out called Limmerman. I'd like to go back to a song I released in 2004. It doesn't really work for me to jump around eras, I find, after releasing this record. So when we start playing Limmerman, we kind of stick to it as if it's like the meat of the sandwich. And then, so this next song is like really good piece of toasted sourdough, which is, I think, in my opinion, like one of the finest breads in a sandwich. If you can get with that, it's like depends on the contrast of the middle of the sandwich. But my point is, this bread is going to go well with the next song. I think we've been on the road for like a month, 6 weeks before our break, so we kind of figured it out. All right, so this song is called White Houses, and and it was kind of this weird situation. Like, I'm surprised a lot of people know a lot of the words to this song. And I don't really have much to say about it because it's so full of lyrics and it's self-explanatory. All I know about this song, and I've been able to continue telling the story because my brother hasn't come to a show yet, I'll stop telling the story once he comes, is that I'm pretty sure this song mildly kind of traumatized him when he was in high school, because it came out when he was in high school. And he was 99 and a half years younger than me. So this is like, in many ways, it's like a super kind of girl tribal song, you know, I think particularly because of the bridge. And my brother, my poor brother, oh my God. So these girls, he didn't divulge too much, but we finally had this talk a couple months before we started this tour, which was starting in October. and White Houses came up, and he finally told me that it was like a real problem for him. We were just in some nice low-key bar on the Lower East Side having a beer. And he, in so many words, basically the picture I have in my head is him, he went to a boarding school. So he's walking down the hall and girls like see him coming. It's like, I mean, he's a great guy on his own. So it doesn't matter that I'm a sister, but I'm sure there were some of those girls that he didn't really know who were just like, oh my God, I know your sister, I know the song. And I think what they did was they just sort of screamed the lyrics into his face, like very 80s movie style, like maybe he's just wearing a towel going into the shower and he gets like blasted by the lyric in the bridge. People that don't know the song have no idea what I'm talking about, but you'll soon figure it out when I sing it. So I dedicate this song to the lovely gentleman that is Edmund. Okay, this is a new keyboard because our keyboard shipped from the States today. It got here today, but it showed up broken. So this is like our like 10th thing, but like, okay, it's gonna work.
So I go.
Future is here when Sky takes his shoes off. Only a couple of you saw that. We got some pedals. So we're gonna move into Liberman, and the first song on the record is called Take It Easy.
Say it once, say it twice, do yourself.
know him. So this great man here, we met in 2007, and we've been playing on and off ever since. And just really quickly, we started off, I was like in a phase, a very Baroque style phase, so it was like long dresses, there was lace on a piano. I requested Sky, well, I didn't request, I said, do you have any vests, Edwardian, Gothic, dead man style? Anything like a, you know, those funeral photos, like, those were just, can you, and he...
I had those vests.
You did. That's where we're friends.
The answer was yes.
And now we've moved on, so we got older, we're both in our mid-30s, some psychedelics have happened, just kind of unbuttoned the vests, and so now we've moved on to all these, like, the opposite of Baroque, so we have all these pedals and loops, and we're able to kind of recreate the collage feeling of the record in a live setting. So, and I wouldn't be able to do that without Sky. So, moving on, this next song on the record is called Willows. This is not quite the organ sound. sound I had on the other. This is very Axel F sounding. So it's supposed to sound like a Rhodes organ. Rhodes organs are hard to tour with. So we, now is this more like, oh wait. That's by the artist Axel F. I know that because I had a movie soundtrack CD, best of movie, like the best hits from movies of the 80s CD, you know those compilations that you get from like Columbia House, like a 1 cent per disc. I'm aging myself, but those were the days. Because you had, see, some people know here. And I learned Axel F from that compilation CD, not from the actual movie. Not at all what this song is about. But just imagine that there's an organ here. So this song is, actually someone asked me this backstage before I came out tonight, like how long it takes to write a song. And a lot of the works for Liberman were these collage pieces that were kind of pieced together. And it was very much about the sound and how like you would fan together different notes and then it would create a vibe and a mood and I would attach it to ideas, lyrical ideas. But there's always one song on record and maybe one song for me that I write every couple years that writes itself really and it's written in like 30 minutes. And I'm sure there's other writers here tonight. In whatever medium you create in, you know you have these bursts of completion, like it's an idea that comes out as a completed thing. It's very strange. So this is the song on this record, and it's called House of Seven Swords. And I wrote it because I opened my desk drawer and I saw a card, and it was this beautiful stack of tarot cards that I didn't know they were mine, but they were in there. And they were really beautiful. The artwork on a lot of the tarot stuff is really cool. I don't know what a lot of it means, but I think it seems like it makes sense to me. The top card, I guess, was my card, because it was House of Seven Swords, and it was this chair that looked like it was made of knives, like a fan splayed out with all these different knives. So I Googled it, well, which I now will say, my old joke was I consulted my Encyclopedia Britannica, but I would just like to say I got an Encyclopedia Britannica for Christmas from my husband, circa 1993. So I'm sure I would have found the meaning of House of Seven Swords in an actual book. At this time, at this juncture when I wrote the song, I didn't have my Britannica handy, so I Googled. And it's very much about this idea that we are swords, and we have different sides to our blade, and we choose sides to our blade. You know, depending on which side we choose, that kind of adds up to our character. And it's very much, I think, the song ended up being about building your life the way you want to build it, a custom-built home, you know? If your life is a home, you can decide how the walls are, and what the furniture is like, and the paint, and the lighting, and it all matters, you know. So this is called House of Seven Swords.
Strength and devotion come without.
to a good station in Nashville. I didn't tell you.
No.
You know, I don't make music for the I don't make music for the radio. The radio is like so different. And I am absolutely flummoxed that they added this song. There's a station in Nashville called Lightning 100. It's one of the rare stations that is like not owned by Clear Channel. A lot of stations are owned by Clear Channel, so you have a set thing to play. But back in the day, when you were a DJ, you could pick what songs you liked, and you listened to that DJ because you liked his taste in music, and they would just pick whatever. But that doesn't work like that anymore. So this song's called Operator, and all I usually have to say about the song is older woman, bad influence. Favorite dance, but the time signature of a waltz, I don't know what it is. So I usually have a waltz on every single one of my records. So this is the waltz of Liberman, and it's very much, I guess, this is a good segue into explaining why I named it Liberman. Liberman is my grandfather, and it was, I didn't realize that was my family's real name until a couple years ago. And he was always my Grandpa Lee. He's my mother's father. When he got back from the war, he changed it because he wanted to open a showroom in New York because he was an artist and a designer. He felt like he would do better with a less ethnic name, and there was so much anti-Semitism at the time. So he changed it from Lieberman to Lee, and he was always my Grandpa Lee. And I knew nothing about this showroom, but apparently it did well. And he was, what I love about him is he wanted to kind of design the silhouette of a woman's shirt in the workplace in the 50s. And I guess it was, I don't know what you call the showroom, but he did well. And the thing with my grandfather is that he's one of those multi-dimensional artists and multi-medium artists. So by the time I was born, he was all done with that, and he moved on to his painting years, and his twilight painting years, which of course was his most fantastic work it was perhaps his strongest work as an artist. So he was an interesting type of artist because he was a traditionally trained guy in many ways. I mean, he could draw a beautiful hand, paint a beautiful hand and a beautiful foot. He was an oil painter mainly. But he was trippy. He was a trippy guy. I mean, it's weird because he was really stern with my mom, and I think that she would like always describe him as this difficult, cantankerous man who had this like secret inner spirituality that was kind of cool. He never showed it to her, you know. But I was the granddaughter, so I think I got a lot of the good stuff because I wasn't his real daughter. And he was trippy. And finally, when I was, I guess this is my grandmother. She was still with it. She was like 94. This is long after Grandpa Lieberman passed away. She finally gave me a painting of his, and it is the painting that really inspired much of this record. And I was trying, I think, to make the sound of the painting because it is like these bright pinks and blues, but really watercolor washed out, kind of like you're in this hazy dream. And Blue Pool is like the ultimate kind of, I think, sound of that painting. And I will say, just for the record, I think the only reason my grandmother gave me that painting is because, well, first of all, it's a nude of one woman painted three ways. She's kind of sitting in a circle with herself and kind of in this, kind of looking like this, in this ritualistic kind of thing. And that woman is not my grandmother. And that was his great muse, you know. She was so beautiful. And she used to sleep with that painting above her bed after he died. That's weird. So I was finally like, I will relieve you of this, Grandma. Please give it to me. She sent it to me. She paid for the shipping. And I mean, this thing is huge. So that's why I named it Lieberman. And this song is called Blue Pool.
So nice to see you again, gray blue pool in LA. Not close my book, move my bag, make some space. Thank you.
Thank you. First of all, how are you all doing this evening? I'm so happy you came out. I mean, it's been such a long time. We're so pleased to be here. I love Vancouver so much, and I will always come back. Thank you. Not that it's totally conditional, but I'm just saying I appreciate you all coming out. So I just realized, I used to, the intro to this song is called Nothing Where Something Used to Be. It's one of my favorites. I don't know why, because I really was channeling being like a teen when I wrote this, but what I think it really was about, I believe these feelings as a teenager don't ever end, you know. It's really about, well, first of all, it's like a breakup song, but I think that we're all of our responses to kind of separation like that, especially when it's not a general consensus amongst the two people. When someone leaves you or surprises you, it really does reduce you down to your most carnal, cavewoman, caveman, teen self, you know. And so I used to say, oh, this song's about jumping off a cliff, because really it is this character like vying for somebody else to just really hand themselves over, because some people are really not able to do that, and I totally get it. But I realized when we played Nashville, which is our last show, that I actually did jump off a cliff, and this is a decent story, because it's, especially if you're in Nashville to hear it, I know we're not there, but I'm just gonna tell you. There's this cliff called, I was gonna say Corpus Christi, but that's like a Navy base. That's not what I'm talking about. Anyway, there's this huge lake in Nashville, and there's this cliff where everybody jumps off. It's like the cool cliff. Like, you go and you pack a lunch and you hike for a mile and you jump. And the cliff is, okay, there's a regular size and then the high one, where it's like when you're with your friends or a date. If, let's say it's a cliff jump on a date, you're like, test. It's like, which one are we gonna do, you know? We went to the high one. John and I went with my husband. We bring two tubes, you throw the tubes down, then you jump. He had a beer, he threw the tube, threw a beer, jumped. Before we even had the chance to discuss, he's gone. And I am like, I really shot myself in the foot. So I'm like, yeah, I cliff jump all the time. I used to cliff jump every summer in Seattle, at PMB, it was fine. I mean, this spot was probably like 10 feet off of like a gross, you know, dam, or one of those little bridge. It was not this. So I, you know, even though I've been with my husband for a long time, I'm like, I'm not going to stand up there and look like a total, like, pousse and, like, just contemplate it and, like, walk down to the next level. So I, like, jumped, and I wanted to jump, like, soon after he was in there, because I was like, I need to follow through with my story. Anyway, I literally cracked my ribcage with him. I, like, sprained my ribcage. This is not the funny part of the story. It's so high up that when you fall, if your hands are out, which I've learned, anyone who cliff jumps, you need to make sure you go in at the right angle. If you go too far back, you will have this level of anima that you have never imagined in your life. You have to get in at the good angle. I'm just telling you this as a friend. And when I hit the water with my hands out, my arms shot up so fast that it pulled like all this muscle from here, and I like couldn't lift the baby. It was like terrible. A week later, a kid had jumped off drunk and like went at the wrong angle and died. So that was like, this is the level of cliff that we're talking about. So if we were in Nashville, I would be able to tell, first of all, someone would know the name of this goddamn cliff, and this is like my PSA announcement, where no one go off the cliff, even when you want to prove to your boyfriend or girlfriend how brave you are. It's so stupid. And I will say, if it is not a real cliff and it's just a mental one, it's always good to jump. So this is called Nothing Where Something Used to Be. Something about you that I tried. This is the first night of the tour, as you may know, and I figured out on my last leg, or the first leg of this tour, that you can indeed tour with a baby and a dog simultaneously in a van. And that's what we figured out how to do it. A tour nanny is essential. A husband really helps. And so tonight is just Victor. Victor is my dog, and he is the mascot of all tours, and he's been on all of my tours since 2005. I don't mean to throw him under the bus right now, but he has fleas. He got them from a cat that he stayed with over Christmas. It's really terrible for my friends that are here tonight. They're not going to want to see me backstage, but I just want you to know fleas are very different from bed bugs, and he's already on medication. He'll be fine. I'm trying to get rid of the fleas before the baby comes tomorrow. So the way we tour is this, the baby comes out like every, her name is Sid. She's a year old. She's turned a year on the 13th. She comes out every week and a half or so. And I can't tell you what a wonderful situation this has been for me, because it proves that I can continue releasing records and doing my career a lot in this way and keep my family together. So this was like a real test run, and it's really, I'll never forget this tour, let's put it that way. So the baby comes out tomorrow, and the husband, and Trish, the nanny, and I will, this leads into this next song, because what I've discovered in having this baby is I don't know anything about babies, and anything you read about a baby when you're pregnant, you won't remember, because when you're pregnant, you are like permanently stone person, and you retain no information whatsoever. So I forgot every book I bought on Amazon, and you just, of course, you go with it. But when this baby would cry early on, I just didn't, I don't know any songs to sing for her. I don't know any nursery rhymes or anything. And like, you know, for instance, the Itsy Bitsy Spider. Who knows the third line of that? I know it. I mean, there's just a lot of these songs. You like miss the meat of the song. You don't know. And this is the only song that when that baby will cry, this is the only song that would come to mind. And whenever I sing the song, she like knows, and she's like really into music. So this song is called River, and it's for Baby Sid.
Sailors on the sea, yeah. So this is our fake last song. We decided on the last tour too. We're just too tired, too old to walk off the stage and come back and just, you know, do it. I mean, sometimes if it was like the right, maybe it was like Carnegie Hall or something, like you have to do it this that way because that is tradition. But this is like our fake last song. It's a good song to end on, fakely. So the I will say, I haven't been here in such a long time. I haven't toured in such a long time. We have a proper shop, and we have been selling these amazing shirts of my dog, Victor, that little feedback. He's so handsome, though, and he's this long-haired wiener, actually. And he, my friend John, made a shirt where he put Victor's head on the body of a horse, which if you know Victor, he's very low to the ground. Like, dachshunds are super low riders. But his spirit is like horse-like. You know, it's like the perfect shirt. And we have vinyl of Liberman, and we're selling the deluxe. We finally got more deluxe versions of the record, which is like piano vocal versions of all of the songs. And so whatever you get, I will sign. We have to drive tonight we have to go across the border, but we can stay long enough to like hang out and whatever. So thank you all again so much for coming. It's been such a pleasure, and thank you for the re-entry. This is the re-entry show, so I will never forget it. Oh, and this is a song I wrote when I was 16 years old at ballet school, and I wrote it really fast. I wrote it because I started skipping class. I started skipping this one class with this teacher who I just couldn't take it. And I would like to say, though, I will never dedicate the song to her because she was such a bitch. But I'm so happy that I chose to just not go to that class and instead start to write music, and because I don't think I would have written the song otherwise. Thanks, Kay.
It's always times like these when I think of you and I wonder.
Song from Rabbits in the Run. This is called Hear the Bells.
Hear the bells, ooh, hear the bells.
perfectly timed one glass of wine per set. I was getting off by the end of last tour. It was like gone halfway through. That's what happens when you tour for more than 4 weeks. Then our good friend Britt, who's at the shop, would literally come out and pour me more wine on stage. But I mom drink now. It's awesome. It's like, you know, when you go out with your mom and then her cheeks get red and hot and you're like, oh no, it's coming. And then she starts talking funny and like, it's like one glass in, you know. I'm proud of that. This is our the last song. I honestly thank you so much for coming out. And we will continue on. I'm very disturbed by the alley behind this theater. You know, it's really sad, and I get it in a way. You know, it's like, I never use needles, but like that is a deep, dark cycle. And we pulled up today, and there was like a cluster of stuff going on. And I've never seen people so open just shooting up like that. And I would like to say that is rough. And you are certainly in your darkest and lowest place when you're like a kind of a victim to your addiction like that. And I just send so much love to those people because I find it so not ironic, but such an interesting geographical situation. This is such a beautiful theater, and I bet there's wonderful artists here all the time, and it's literally right up against such pain, you know? So I just want to like project this next song to what's going on behind us because I feel like it needs some light, you know? Anyway, this is called The Marching Line. Thank you.
Don't slip on leaves. Smile at the strangers who know what you need. Clouds like cathedrals. So I want it's an overture. It's time to join the marching line. Leave it all behind. Join the marching line. Fortune tellers, fortunes tell her.
Have a wonderful night. Thank you so much. Thank you for the great skies field for everything tonight. Thank you.